what it was like during the Vietnam War and now these many years after. And our guest for the program brings us, I think, a perspective that we don't often get on this war. That is the perspective of someone who grew up with it and lived through it. Her name is Lely Hayslip. She was born in Vietnam in a small village near Da Nang, a place called Ky La. And she explains in a book that she's written about her experience, she explains that she was a peasant girl for the first 12 years of her life. And then she says for the next three, she loved, labored, and fought for the Viet Cong against American and South Vietnamese soldiers. However, by 1965, when she left that village where she was born, her name was on a Viet Cong death list. She explains that to the people of the village where she grew up, the South Vietnamese and the Americans were outsiders, very much like other people who had come before them. They came heavily armed. The Viet Cong were thought of as more as neighbors than outsiders. And in her book, When Heaven and Earth Changed Places, she writes that the greatest ammunition the Viet Cong had was the goodwill of the people. For the American soldiers who went to Vietnam, she writes, the war was a simple thing. It was a matter of democracy against communism. The Vietnamese people, though, saw it very differently. She says that they knew very little about democracy and perhaps even less about communism. What they thought it was all about was a fight for independence, much like our own American Revolution. Lely Hayslip grew up in this village at the point where the fighting got very bad. She and her mother went to Da Nang. She lived there for a number of years, where she met an American man, a civilian, who asked her to marry him, and they were married. And then she came to the United States and lived here for a number of years. At one point, she went back to Vietnam to visit her family that was still living there. And I think it was that visit, seeing the conditions in Vietnam, that led her to want to try to organize some effort to help rebuild the country. And so was born the East Meets West Foundation, of which she is the director. And it's a foundation that has worked to provide help to communities in Vietnam for children and families to rebuild their lives. They have worked to build medical clinics, to provide education and prosthetics. Those are just some of the projects that have been funded by the foundation. She has written two books about her experiences. The first one I mentioned, When Heaven and Earth Changed Places, and just now recently published book entitled Child of War, Woman of Peace, which came out in January and is published by Doubleday. And she inspired film director Oliver Stone to make a movie about her life and about Vietnam from that perspective. And that film will be premiering soon. The film is entitled Heaven and Earth, and I think is due to open in December. And I'm not sure what the latest is. We'll ask Ms. Hayslip about that. As we talk, you should certainly feel free to call in if you have questions, comments. I would be happy to talk with you. Our number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you.
It is nice to meet you and talk with you in person. I don't know how many people might remember, but in 1990, when Heaven and Earth Changed Places was published, we did talk at that time on the telephone when the book was new, and it's nice to have you here.
Well, thank you for giving me a chance to be in here with you. It's a little cold, but it's nice.
Yes, well, it could be a lot worse, but it's definitely not like Southern California. When is the film due to open? Do you know?
The world premiere December the 16th, but the open for nationwide at December 25th, Christmas
okay.
Day.
So we'll be on. How do you know how Oliver Stone found out about you? Was it simply that he had read a copy of the book Heaven and Earth to Change Places and thought it would be good to try and tell the story of the war from that perspective?
The book got handed down on the Los Angeles Times magazine, a Sunday magazine, and I was on the front cover. And the title was Another Side of the War, and that is what interested him, and he read that, and he liked it. Then when the New York Times book review, also on front page, and end of the book review, they write that if the Hollywood have enough courage to put this story on the screen, then perhaps we, Americans, come to terms with the Vietnam War. So he take that challenge to come looking for me and absent the books, mm-hmm. 1989.
What was your impression of him when you first met him?
He's a very confident man. You know, he's a healthy, strong, very sincere. He told me at that time this movie will be made after he do two movies before my movie. That is was The Born 4th July and JFK. And so I'm very confident in him because he was Vietnam vet. He made his story on platoon. He made the story of the veteran return home at Ron Corvus, born 4th July. And when I hear from him that he can direct this movie, I feel very relieved. At least he understood about the war from both sides, Vietnamese and American. He also told his side of the story. Now it's fair for the general public's interest at about Vietnam War see another side of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
We both involved in the same time. He only 1 year older than I am. And so we had a lot of similar experience. It's just the culture different and what went through in my heart and in my mind, which is he didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with him for 4.5 months on the set every day to make sure that our culture, our emotion, our personality is showing through on the screen.
Hmm. So you're happy with the result?
Yes. The two books, Have in Vietnam and Have It in United States, and put together for 2 hour film, it's not easy to do because there are so much that he want to show, but it's going very fast. We hope that American audience understand it because it's the first Vietnamese film that ever been made and about the woman, about the villagers. And so the name and the face, of course, is not familiar yet with the American people, but he tried to show what is the people in the village go to day and night.
Mm-hmm. What is it that you hope that Americans will understand better as a result of seeing this movie and or perhaps reading the books that you have written and reading your story?
The Vietnam War is just like any other war before that. It's not benefit for anyone. But it brings a lot of suffering in many people from both countries. At a villagers, we try to survive with our family, worship our ancestors, and working on our land. However, the war came and changed all of that. The family appears in many different ways. Too many separation, not only in a family, but in society, in country, and turn everyone hate each other. A young girl like myself had been through torture and rape, and it's a lot of painful that you see too. However, all that negative that had happened to me in war, I turned into something that I end up married to an American who is Vietnamese, the Viet Cong call it an enemy. I moved to United States and live here, become U.S. citizen. Then communists, it become the enemy of my own and in the United States. And yet I went back there and visit and worked there. And so Tommy Lee Jones, who played my husband, he's so good that you can understand that it's no such thing as enemy. The message is showing that is it can happen to anyone. It's about time to put the war behind us. We understand it. We're looking for another better way to live together as a people to people. We make sure that our children can understand why the father went to Vietnam, what the Vietnamese people went through, and how can they deal with it now after the war. More than that, it's a universal story. It's a human being be caught in the between in the two war. And so now that the war is over, we have to recognize it right or wrong, good or bad, then where did we go from here? Forgive one another, but don't forget about the war, and try to see what can we do to understand who our enemy are.
Our guest this morning is Lely Hayslip. She was born and grew up in Vietnam, lived there during the Vietnam War, and then came to the United States and lived in the United States for a number of years, then went back to visit her family and decided that it was important for her to try to be involved in the business of rebuilding, and so went on to start the East Meets West Foundation, of which she is a director, and a group that's organized to provide humanitarian aid and assistance and help in rebuilding to Vietnam. And she's the author of two books about her experiences. The first, When Heaven and Earth Changed Places, and the second and most recent, Child of War, Woman of Peace. And also is the subject of a film directed by Oliver Stone that will be released in December, and film entitled Heaven and Earth. And if you have questions or you'd like to talk with her, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. When you go to Vietnam today, what are the reminders of war? What are the things that you see that tell you that the war had happened?
Some helicopter is still there and here. Some tanks, it's army tank, is still around, and children crawl all over it and play in it. Bomb crater all over, now become a pond called Uncle Sam Fish Pond. Many people with no arm and no leg. Many victims of Agent Orange, especially in children, disabled, handicapped. The country is just so poor. There are a lot of things, as you can say, it's relayed by the war. But the land is healing. The green rice paddy, it recovered many, many military bases, more than everything else. The graveyard, they're like my village. It's more grave than people live in it. And so that is a reminder of the war. Jana Beach, Da Nang Airport, Tung Thung Nhuc Air Base, all of the things that United States built for the 52 bomber, that little brown building, mm-hmm. is all still there. And so when you, if you go to countryside, you only see the graveyard and poor people. But when you're in a city, you see many, many images of the United States, like the old truck that used to drive ammunition through the city. Some 52 bomber been shot and down, and now it's just like a junkyard. Mm. And so that kind of thing that remind you of the war.
The book, the title of that first book, When Heaven and Earth Changed Places, I think says, it talks about the various experiences in your life. I think when you experienced great reversals, in one sense, it's about when you first left the country and moved to the city and lived in Da Nang, about going from Vietnam to the United States. What it was like for you going from the United States back. When you went back that first time after having been away from home, what sort of things really, really struck you most?
To contract the culture shock. It's just like when I was in small village of Gila to Saigon, 1966. It's a culture shock. Then from Saigon to San Diego, that's another culture shock. But I've been here for 16 years, and my eyes, you know, it judges the way it's the freeways work and supermarket and everything on a TV show. You went back to Vietnam, the country is 50 years behind us. Everything is standstill. It's just like I was in a calmer for the last 16 years in my life. I lost totally. In 1970, when I left Vietnam, the country was very rich. Hundreds of thousands of U.S. dollars pouring there every day. Men and women, military and civilian alike, they have a very good life. Everything from makeup to underwear to military equipment to TV, radio, you name it, it's there for the people. In 1986, that I went back, it's gone. It's just like the rain washed everything away. Only left is the suffering people after the war. And that is making me a human being, that I see that is reality. That is where is 60 million people live there. And it's just no word that I can describe the feeling. It still is today. In the city, it's a little bit better. Many other countries have come in and invested there. Many humanitarian groups have come and helped. But if you get out of the city and you grind through the countryside, it still remains the same. So the biggest heartbreak and disappointment in me at that time, that it's just like, how did it happen? How could people forgotten that country one time is so beautiful and so rich, and now it just run from the rich to almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? What do you think explains that?
First of all, after the South Vietnamese and American troop withdraw in 73, everything reduced back. Then in 75, the communists come in and took it over. We don't know what happened. All the things that left behind from the war, all the riches and all the good things, is what happened. We don't know. But when I traveled to Da Nang and Saigon and Hanoi, there was nothing. It's nowhere we can see all of that thing. It just gone somewhere. But what just happened was most of the people, intelligent people, have left the country in 75. Then after that, they came to United States or they went on other places in the world. The communist leadership, they know how to fight the war, but they did not know how to run the country. And because of they under the communist system for 40 years in the North, they want to make everything equal. And it's not going to work because in the South it's so rich. It's so rich, they don't know how to handle it. And then they send the people from the North to the South to control people, tighten away from people, put people in prison and jail them. And if they have anything, they just come and took it. So we don't know what happened. I heard the story from the refugee and the boat people, you know, talking about how poor the country and how horrible it is the communists treated the village and the people. But I never understood how bad it was until I'd been there myself. And that is a shock, as I never can forget how the image that I see, the big city like Saigon. Hmm.
Well, we have someone to talk with here. Let's do that on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. I assume you have some opinion about the embargo. Maybe you'll be talking about that through the next couple of days, and as well as on the radio a little. There's a lot of untold stories. For one, immediately after the Americans stopped the war, it was sort of almost like the Chinese took over. There was quite a bit of action between the Chinese and the Vietnamese through the late 70s. So war cannot be said to have ended in some ways. And then, of course, there's the huge tragedy of Pol Pot, who the Chinese were supporting, and that whole sad story, which the Vietnamese were entangled in a number of ways, which are are problematic to assess in a short period of time. That was my reaction to what you were just talking about. The question I sort of had was, a series of them, actually. The poverty in the countryside, I've seen a little bit, not for being there, but by seeing some videotapes. And one thing that might be striking to people listening to the radio is that in the villages, they use a... most people don't have even a radio, so what they have set up is little speakers in everybody's home and in the center square, or the town square, whatever. And then they actually use oxen to carry batteries to places to charge them, and they have three sets, and they run. They're always having one battery charged, one set of batteries charged, one set in use, and one set on its way to be charged. So it's really an amazing story of, as you say, poverty. Is it to think that even transistor radios, which are so inexpensive now, are not available?
Yeah, that is the thing that we take an advantage of over here every day. And when you go to country, they recycle of everything. They're like the Coke can and beer can. They take that and they reuse it to something very useful in a family. And just like my mother, she went out today and she collect all the beer can, which she doesn't need it. But the people in the village can use the beer can to use as a drinking cup. And so it just, they recycle from A to Z. They waste nothing. And you see the country, it have no trash because everything is reused and reused. So thank you for your comment, but... the country is very, very poor. That's why we drive very hard to help the villagers to have a little better life by have some health care and education for the children.
Yes.
The last 5 years, we have licenses to work there, but to come in and out, it's very, very difficult. And I hope that people like you and people who are listening today perhaps can write to their congressman and talk about it, the time the we have to go with forward and let the embargo lift it so that you know, two nations can be friends and help each other to rebuild the country, not only Vietnam, but over here too, because the healing of the wound of war is need to be done by interact with one another, not just against this, but go forward with to recognize who we are and who we try to help so that we can heal.
I have one other thing, if I could go on, and that's I'm wondering if you were in the countryside, were you religiously Buddhist? And I'm just curious if you, not necessarily that you talked to Oliver Stone about this, but my understanding is that he was in Vietnam before he was in the military, and that he was working in a Catholic school teaching English or something. I'm just wondering if you could try, and it's probably quite difficult, to sort of explain how the city and the French-educated cultural elites, who were mainly Catholic, looked in some ways to you know, a person growing up in the countryside. I realize that's a difficult thing to try to to evoke, but I would like for you to try a little bit, and thanks for your work.
Thank you. Yes, as you know, in we had 10,000-year war with the Chinese, and they trained us, they taught us how to worship ancestors and follow their traditional. Then the French won 100-year war with the French, and they want to turn all of us to Catholic. And that is what Vietnamese people try to again that. But then we're not really Buddhism. We the family worship our ancestor is more like Taoism. And so when the Catholic come to the village and try to convert all the villagers to become Catholic, that is when we stand up and fight against the religion ideal. When all of us read my books and went to Vietnam with me 2 times and worked with me in Thailand for 3.5 months, he get to send that is he not turning to Buddhist, but what he understand about spiritualism, he understand about the culture, and he understand about how the people live with nature and harmonies and work in the land that they love. That is what bring him make this movie is more like a spiritual type of thing rather than the Vietnam War. So he have story of the Vietnamese villager to the American audience so that they can understand that. And when you see that movie, it will answer most of your question about how he related to.
Again this morning, our guest is Lely Hayslip, director of the East Meets West Foundation. She was born and grew up in Vietnam and has written about some of her experiences both in Vietnam and after coming to America in 2 books, which if you're interested, I'm sure you can find in the bookstore. When Heaven and Earth Changed Places is the first and most recent, entitled Child of War, Woman of Peace, which was published in January by Doubleday. And her books were the basis for a film that will be released in December, a film made by Oliver Stone entitled Heaven and Earth. And I think soon there will be a paperback version of When Heaven and Earth Changed Places out when the movie comes out. So again, it should be easy if people would like to read the book. It'll be out there and they can see it. But one other thing I do want to mention, our guest this morning will be giving a talk tonight at 5:30, between 5:30 and 9:30. This is at the University YMCA at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. She will give a talk. There will be some Vietnamese and Asian food that you can sample. She will be showing some clips from the film, and all of this will be happening tonight at 5:30. There is a donation for this. They're asking for a donation, and I think, does this money go to benefit the foundation?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a contribution to the East Meets West Foundation. So you'll have an opportunity to hear more from her, and that is something that's open to anybody who would like to attend, and all are welcome. So that's tonight at the University YMCA on Wright Street in Champaign, beginning at 5:30. We have another caller here, so let's talk with him on our toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for having a guest on, David. I spent a little time in Vietnam in 1969 in the rice paddies in the Mekong Delta. And the question I wanted to ask your guest is, well, let me explain how I felt about it at the time and see if she agrees. I felt that the people were so poor then, and I understand they're even worse off now, that a political affiliation really had very little meaning to them. And probably because of the massive bombing and the amount of weapons that we brought, we probably turned a lot of the Vietnamese people against us. It's not that they were pro-communist, it's just that I think we created too much of a problem there. I just wonder what her thinking was on that.
Well, as you know, I'm one of those villagers. As I explained it in my book, that in 1963, when the first helicopter came to my village, to children of Gila, it's just like God sent someone to visit us from heaven. And we pray, and we joy, and we happy, and we so proud that this good-looking man come from heaven to visit us. But then when he came with gun, and he came with helicopter, and more men to kill our people, and burn our village, and destroy our home, every one of us turned against him. And I'm sure that if any other country come to United States and invade that country, if people here take the same action, same thing, that to stand up and protect your family first, protect your city and your land. And that is why a lot of the villagers turn against the American. Not only American, but then the French before that, then the Chinese, and so go on. And that is why the war in Vietnam, between United States and Vietnam, I think it's a lot of misunderstanding who they go there to fight for. I understand that the United States servicemen go there to protect us and help our people and make sure that we have peace and freedom, and we appreciate that. But at that time, we didn't know. We thought that they come there, invaded our country, and destroyed our fatherland, so everybody drawn again to American, and you see that for yourself, too.
One more quick comment. There was a program on last night. Of course, yesterday was Veterans Day, and one of the figures that I heard about the names on the Vietnam Memorial was that 50% of the some 50,000 names are boys 17 and 18 years old. So you have to understand that the soldiers that were sent were boys and really didn't understand what they were doing. They were sent into a situation where they were scared, and the only thing that they knew how to do was try to stay alive. So you're right in that it was complete misunderstanding on both sides.
Yes, now I had three sons, 26, 22, and 17. I honestly understand where they're coming from and where you're coming from, and the more I understand, the more I feel sorry for your man. It have to be in my country in that kind of condition. As you know, the 58,000 servicemen and women killed in Vietnam, and still 2,200 missing in action, and many more have a hard time, homeless, jobless, after come home and took their own life. However, the size of the war that damaged in Vietnam was 2 million Vietnamese killed.
Yes, I understand that. And I've learned from it, and I hope that other people can learn from it. And I have sons of my own that are in their early 20s now. And if this country decides to do something of this sort again, I'm going to make sure that my sons are elsewhere. And I hope that everybody else will do that too.
I'm happy for you, because we have to stop somewhere. What did we learn from the war in Vietnam? That is what my book and the movie and you call in, that helped us to understand what did we learn through experience about the war. It's no do any good for me to write the book and make into movie and go out and talk about the war and how horrible my life and your life went through in a battle zone. But how can we take a different look and have to ask ourselves, what is benefit? We turn on the CNN today, and that all we see.
Well, the benefit, in my mind, is a number of people became extremely wealthy from selling weapons and you know, a number of things along that line.
But don't forget, we voted for them.
Right.
Okay.
But often those people that we vote for don't do what we want. So we have to have the courage, when they tell us to do something that's insane like that, just to ignore them. It takes courage to do that. It's difficult, but it takes time to learn that.
Yes, well, you tell your children not go to war, and I tell my children not go to war, and many mother and father out there tell the children the same thing. Perhaps something will change.
Okay, I thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I think that your feeling, your position, what it was like to be living in Vietnam during the war comes through very strongly in the first book, When Heaven and Earth Change Places, because I think one gets the understanding that for somebody like you living in your village, you and your family and your neighbors, what you really wanted most was to be left alone.
Yes.
So you could live, and that while perhaps you were more sympathetic to the Viet Cong because they were, as I said in the beginning, it was more like they were your neighbors. It wasn't like they'd come from some other place. At the same time, you and the people who lived in the village were really caught in between the Viet Cong and the South Vietnamese and the Americans, because it seems that each of those two sides, each of these two groups of people that were fighting, were always wondering, for you in the middle, are you sympathetic to one side or the other? Can you give them information? What can you do for them? And I think as you explain at one point in the book, it was like you had to mollify the Americans and the South Vietnamese during the daytime, and then at night you had to deal with the Viet Cong. And whereas probably what you really would have wished for best is that everybody would just go away and go take your fight someplace else and just leave us alone.
Yes, that's its bottom line, yes. See, every man come to our village with the gun. He say, I'm here for you. We're willing to die for you. And we're willing to sacrifice our life for the village. But nobody asking us, that is what we want. If he just asked us similarly, that is what we wanted, we would say, please go home with your mother and just leave us alone so that I can marry my next one, you know, neighbor boys and have lots of children so they can worship me when I die. Because we don't really want anybody to die for us. We don't want to die either. Everybody wants to survive and live on their life accordingly to come to earth to do their mission, whatever it may be. But the war situation, there was no such a thing. Everybody there who have a gun, he have the right to give order to kill or to be killed. And that is a very sadness of situation in war. As you know, that the war left 3,200,000 wounded in Vietnam and 300,000 South Vietnamese orphans, and 14,505,000 refugees by the end of the war in 75, 71,253,000 literature toxic chemical that spray in the land. And that is a 10% of South Vietnam, the land in Vietnam that flooded. And 18 million gallon of Agent Orange. And you imagine here you have a farmland and all of that stuff spray in your land every day. And how can we survive, you know? And also 15,500,000 ton of bomb dropped in Vietnam. And 5,480,000 acres of tropical forest destroyed by the war. So now it's 70 million people live in it. They have to breathe the air. And it's not only in Vietnam, but it go around the world. Then the water that they have to drink out from the river and the food that they ate. I mean, that is, we turn around and we kill ourselves because we destroy the motherland, I mean, Mother Earth, and it somehow it come back to us.
Yeah. Let's talk with somebody else here. We'll go to line one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good program. I think it's been beneficial. Just a minute. Somehow my radio is still on. I thought it was off. Loved it.
Okay.
I think it one of the most interesting comments your guest has made is that she has described how Vietnam is 50 years behind, give or take 10 or 20 is what I would estimate. But one of the culture shock aspects for the average American trooper when he got over there was that it looked more like Vietnam was 90 to 100 years behind to our people. there were times when it appeared to me that we were literally dragging Vietnam into the 20th century. I'm sure it was very pastorally beautiful, and will be again someday, but and probably you can still find places that are. Even in 68 and 69, the Vietnamese were ingeniously making the Ho Chi Minh sandals out of our rubber tires and using Budweiser and Coke cans to shingle bus stops and make other interesting things, linings of chests, etc. So in that respect, the people were way back then even ingenious with these leftovers from other spheres of the economy. I would like to ask before I go further, approximately what year it was that your guest was a what we would call a high school girl. What year was she that age?
I was born in 1949, so from 1949 to 1954, I watched a wisdom of the war between France and Vietnam. Then after the war with the France, I have little peace time between 54 to 62. Then 62, that is the time about enter into high school. But I only went up to third grade because the war broke out with the United States in 62. That is when I first came to my village then. Then I fought with the Viet Cong, with the South Vietnamese, and with the U.S. So 65, I left my village. So I never did have a high school spirit like you have.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. So then your early childhood was mainly with the French rather than with the Americans. And then your later years as a young woman with the Americans. Now, your description of some of the people's reactions to the helicopters coming in is probably reminiscent of Captain Cook coming to Hawaii for some of our literary listeners. Was that a rather widespread reaction out in the villages that these were almost godlike or magical things coming?
Yeah, because the friends, when they come to the village, they don't have helicopter at that time. They have an old airplane and a truck and tanks, but the helicopter is not the same. Then when they ended the war with the French at the village, we did not think about the war. We don't really know where the helicopter coming from. We thought that it just first the villager thought that the French, the French come back and invade us again. But then when we found out it wasn't France, it was U.S., so the helicopter is never seen before.
And what was it that made them mainly look like they weren't going to be friends?
Because the villager know some can speak French. They know that it's not French. And when the Viet Cong give us information that, no, they wasn't French, they are American invader. And at that time, then, we started to understand that the South Vietnamese, Ngo Dinh Diem, signed a contract with the United States President to bring the emanation, the troops, the war in Vietnam to fight against our brothers who win the North in 1954. And so that is when the villagers started to say, okay, we can't take another war. We have to stand up and fight against it.
Yeah, so then it almost seems to me that the American slogan, trying to win the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese, wasn't all that inaccurate. It was an attempt to get you all to consider that the non-communist way would be the better way in the long run, which other parts of the program today and other things that are in the news and the media and, over the past couple of years seem to show that the communist way indeed was not the the better way to go. So perhaps we all can forgive you all for being so far behind the times and not understanding that our message wasn't all that bad, and perhaps you all can forgive us for messing with the land in your country. But in terms of helping, as we did with Germany and Japan, I mean, You see, that was the hand of friendship for those that we vanquished. While we certainly did not win in the Vietnam War, a case could be made that we lost, a case could be made that we didn't lose while we were there. But anyway, it's not like Germany and Japan. What would you say to the idea that since the Vietnamese won...
Don't you think that if you and I would sit down and play a game, and we already know before we start it, the game going to be end sometime, and you or I, we're going to one going to win, another one going to lose. However, after the game, we both stand up and shake hands and say, thank you, it's a nice game, or a sad game, and help to rebuild the country. At Vietnamese people, they forgot about the war, they forgive about the people who harmed them and hurt them, and if you go back to Vietnam today, the people treat you just like a hero, they treat you just like a king, and they open their home up for you, and they open their heart out for you.
Well,
and you can see that it's a culture differences here.
Perhaps they understand that this is not saying that I'm in favor of war or anything like that, but the economy was obviously far better. You're describing a rich country, as it were, and then how it went rapidly downhill after we pulled out and after the North took over. And as far as the gentleman Pol Pot and the Chinese, my memory, and I've been a student of this for some time here now, my memory is that the Vietnamese army remained extremely competent and extremely powerful, and they rather made mincemeat of the few Chinese incursions that there were. Sometime there in the latter 70s, I think they were, but maybe mid-70s. But the Chinese weren't really in there actively hassling the Vietnamese, as I recall. Now, do you have some information from living there at that time? Were you still living there? Do you know differently?
The Chinese right now is give a lot of problem with Vietnamese. The reason is because embargo against Vietnam. The U.S. businessmen who interest to do the business in Vietnam cannot get in there. So they went to China and to tell the Chinese government that if you can take the island right outside of Da Nang, the two small islands that have a lot of oil in it, and they said that if you can invade Vietnam, take that island, I will buy it from you. That's the only way the United States businessmen can do the business there. So the Chinese army came to small island and occupied there. Then the Vietnamese army go out there and say, no, that is our island. You cannot come here and take it over. So still the war go on today between Chinese and Vietnamese. But that is because of U.S. trade embargo against it.
We're at the point that we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry that we can't continue to talk, but we're simply out of time. I would say again, if people would like to read more about the experiences and life of our guest, you can look at the two books that we have mentioned, When Heaven and Earth Changed Places and Child of War, Woman of Peace. Also, coming in December, you can see the film about her, based on her life, made by Oliver Stone, the film entitled Heaven and Earth. And then for people here in and around Champaign-Urbana, she'll be giving a talk tonight at the University YMCA. We'll be showing some clips from the film, Heaven and Earth. And they are asking for a donation, but this does go to the foundation which she heads, the East Meets West Foundation, which does relief work in Vietnam, building clinics, trying to provide some education and so forth to try and help people to deal with the effects of the war. Well, I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share this story with your audience.